Hey, Aloha Love Tribe. Guess what? I have somebody special here on the Bitcoin Peace and Music podcast who I've been following and stalking, and I got to make friends with Tomer Strohlite because he is a super cool guy who cares about the world and Bitcoin and how it can make a difference for humanity. And you're definitely one of my heroes in the space, Tomer. It's such an honor to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you. It's almost 11:11, so it, where I'm at. So I always like to make
sure. It's a magic time.
It is a magic time. So
it's almost 1:11 here.
Okay.
So we're magic, I suppose.
It is. It's double magic. Well, I always think it's like it's 11:11 24 times a day around the world, right? So you have 24 times. If you miss it in your time zone, you're like, ah, cool, whatever. I'll go make a wish later. So let's talk. You're a former digital media executive. Now you're the editor-in-chief at Swan Bitcoin. I mean, you've been in Bitcoin since 2013, and you started coming out, it sounds like, in 2021 with your name really being more forward-facing. Why the change?
I had for a long time wanted to be involved full-time in Bitcoin, but couldn't find something that was full-time Bitcoin. And I had all these other jobs that people were paying me for, right? All these fiat jobs, as we say. But then when the COVID crisis hit, the fiat job that I was in dried up, and I found myself not working. And I found myself really unable to find something else to do that was useful with my time. And I decided to just kind of take the plunge and dedicate myself full time to Bitcoin. And it felt like it was the right thing to do to write about it, because I had a lot of thoughts, and I felt that there was maybe a gap I could fill by, at the time, writing a bunch of short pieces that explained to beginners primarily about Bitcoin, and many of the very unusual aspects of it and why it was so different from so many other things, but also at the same time, to be able to share some of these insights with seasoned Bitcoiners, that because many of these insights were things that people hadn't quite seen in that perspective. So I did, because I really had nothing to lose at that point. And I started writing in Bitcoin, and one thing led to another. And I did the job, and eventually got the job. So
you did the job and you got the job. I like the way you say that. It's super cool. Let's go here. Let's see if it's popping up. Oop, there we are. Yay. All right. So what happened? Where are you going? There you are. Okay. So Tomer, you wrote this Why Bitcoin book. And this is something, how did this come to you? Because this is, for those of you guys, you know, who want to have a printed copy, you must get this book. I'm just like, I got several copies of this, and I want to have like a stack to give to everybody, because I think it's so beautiful and well done. And it really shows me what kind of a beautiful writer you are, and thinker, and just actually like an ultra caring human, and why Bitcoin is so important. So can you tell us about the Why Bitcoin book?
Sure. I mean, the history of it is, when I decided to start writing about Bitcoin, I started writing this series of short articles called Why Bitcoin, and each article was meant to be like 2 to 3 minutes long. So very, very short, kind of filling the gap between a tweet and a huge essay, because that's what most people were doing, was writing really, really big essays. So I wanted to condense these ideas very briefly, and I ended up writing a grand total of 26 of them. At first I just was publishing them as I went. I asked in a bunch of Telegram groups what people wanted to have answered as Why Bitcoin book series. And that was the job that I was doing to get the job. Eventually, Swan Bitcoin approached me and they said, hey, we'd like to turn this series into an ebook, which they did. And when it was all said and done, the inspiration to make it into an actual physical book was first pushed on me by the artist, who goes by the name of Chief Monkey. He had done this wonderful work, and he published a book of it so that people could have, because there was only one original, but there could be many books of it. Let me show you his book. His book was on, I'll step back into the shot in a second. His book was called Bitcoin Bhavacakra, and it was based off of this beautiful work of art.
Oh my gosh!
He and Jonad Vaks had prepared, and so he made a little book with all the images of and the components of that artwork. He said, "Tomer, you've already written a book. Why don't you just put it together and publish it? It's easy." It turned out it wasn't quite as easy as he said. So first of all, I only accepted his offer if he would create a work of art that would go with the book, because I wanted it to be something that was beautiful for Bitcoiners. And I just thought that would be the right way to package together the material in this book, and having done some other thing in between writing the original articles and getting on the book project, I thought that was going to be what I really wanted to give to the Bitcoin community, was these beautiful things. So he and I talked for a couple of months, and he came up with a work of art that graces the cover of it, and portions of it grace the inside of the pretty much every page of the book, or every double page spread in the book, because every article is just one double page spread right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to make a book out of it. And it turned out to be a really big project. I'm not complaining about it, but it took hundreds of hours after all the initial material was written, because for the book, I had to perfect everything. I had to remove hyperlinks, of course, and clickbait from one article to the next, because it wasn't going to actually do anything. And I wanted to, and I'd had months since I'd written the series, so I wanted to reorder them, because I originally published them in the order that they came to me, not in any organized order, and the book was going to be organized in linear. So I wanted to reorganize, and some of these things ended up getting a very significant rewrite. Many of them, because they had to fit into a two-page spread, although we had lots of images, so we had a lot of flexibility. But fitting them into the whole was part of the challenge. And I just think taking the maturity of all the insights that I'd had through everything was the completion of it. So many of the articles have been retitled. Most have been re-edited. Some have been almost completely rewritten from the original. If anyone's interested, they can compare it. I've left the originals as is on my Medium site, but you can get the ebook for free at swanbitcoin.com. That one, yeah. That,
you right here. So for those of you listening on the podcast, it's events.swanbitcoin.com/ybitcoin. But then you can also get the physical copy on the Blurb site, right? And so it's blurb.com/user/Tomer Strohlig. Hey, Strohlig, what happened to they didn't let you have your two other letters?
The site, I don't run the site. That's a site that prints it. And apparently your name cannot be longer than however many characters.
Oh man, they'd hate my name.
Whatever it is. So my name is two characters too long. Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's where you can get either a hard cover or a soft cover, a version of the book, if you like it and want to display it on your coffee table.
You have to, you guys, I'm serious. Like I love this book so much. It's so beautiful. And I'm a visual learner. I really, really highly, like, if you're a Bitcoiner, if you're interested in Bitcoin and you want to be a Bitcoiner and you're just curious, this is such an easy, gorgeous yet detailed way of understanding Bitcoin and not just all the technical stuff like the white paper behind you. Like it's put in a human way. It's really, really well done, Tomer. I love it. Love it. Great. Love it. I mean, I'm working on a book right now called Snap Goes the Mommy. And I feel like I'm going to battle every time I sit in front of the screen, because it's like, okay, sit here. You have to organize, try to let it flow, get it out, be in the flow, but be logical and all the things. And I've never written a book before. So it's very, I commend you on, you know, assembling this in such a beautiful, beautiful way.
I had a great editor. The guy who laid it out was also my editor. He's a designer and an editor. And he's very meticulous and very disciplined. And he insisted that we go through each article over and over again until it was as perfect as we could get it. And so it was like, you know, there's 27 articles in there. I think we probably had to meet for 45 days, every single day consecutively. Like we skipped a day here and a day there, but for the most part, it was every morning for an hour, we'd go through one article. And then when we had gotten through all the articles, we tried to read through all of them again, like reading two or three a day and making all the necessary changes. So it was like, I'm pretty happy with it. I've only found one typo. Oh, there's only been one typo found in the whole book, and my mom found it of all people. She's like, I don't understand this sentence, because I misspelled C's S-E-E-S-E-A-S with S-E-E-S, which of course a spelling checker doesn't pick up on.
Doesn't know the context there. Gosh, that's amazing. Well, okay, so how has your life changed since you wrote this book? How has your life changed since you also, you did Bitcoin is Generational Wealth too, which I think is really cool. It's a short film.
Yeah. I mean, my life has changed tremendously since I dedicated it full time to being in Bitcoin and producing content for Bitcoin. The people in my life have changed dramatically. Again, I think there was a end of one chapter of my life, which isn't to say that I'm no longer in communication with friends and family from before, but a lot of what happened, I think, during COVID dissolved a lot of the connective tissue of my previous life.
You know, yeah.
Not going into work, not seeing people, people not wanting to get out as much, people not having the same economic means as they used to have. And I ended up connecting with a lot of people in the Bitcoin community, which is very much largely a digital community, a networked community. And so I made a lot of new friends in the Bitcoin space, spend a lot of time there. And the awakening, both from taking the orange pill and the spiritual experience of becoming a really full-time dedicated Bitcoiner has been pretty life-altering.
It's remarkable. I can relate to that. And I haven't been in Bitcoin nearly as long as you. I'm like last January is when I started learning about all of this. And then when I really dove in was, you know, Alex Gladstein and all the human rights stuff. And I was listening to a lot of his interviews and podcasts. And I was just like, oh, this is something that's good for humanity. This isn't just a number go up thingy like crypto, blah, 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 which is why I originally was getting in. I'm like, I need to make some money and this crypto stuff looks interesting. And then I started learning the difference between all of it. And I was like, oh no, people are being scammed and there's Ponzi schemes and all this crap and still happening, obviously. But when I really started realizing like, what is money and who's in control of it and why it's not good to have these folks in control of it and how it is undermining humanity and it's undermining our souls. It really, really, that's lit me up big time, you know, because I'm such a proponent of freedom and love and people living their fullest lives, you know, and not really understanding that the money part was such a way that people stay enslaved in so many different ways, you know, and that are, so I just, I knew this was something I had to get into and then starting to learn about you and read your work. And then certainly listening to you all the time on Cafe Bitcoin and everything. I was just like, okay, Tomer gets it. Tomer's a very, you know, I can tell you're a spiritually awake human, you know, and I titled the name of this, you know, Bitcoin and spiritual terrorism. And it sounds like it, and we don't have, you know, but I feel like we are at war, you know, with these other powers that do not have our love and our hearts and our children's hearts at interest. They don't care. And that feels, my mama bear comes out and mama bear don't play that. and so I'm curious for you, I mean, what's your take on this? Like, how do you feel like we can rise up as a humanity, like as a human race, you know, and pull Bitcoin into the fold?
That's a big question. I think that because you touched on so many different things. I mean, just first at this very human level, that we're all individuals and we're all equally deserving of a fair shot at life and the ability to apply ourselves and discover who we are and work with other people and produce things and be able to keep what we've earned and keep what we've made and then trade it with each other voluntarily is a very basic kind of justice. And it's a very basic kind of justice that isn't available to us anymore. When we get to keep a small portion of what we make, we get steered away from the things that we're passionate about to the things that other people would rather see us do. We're trained to think in a certain way or even more so trained not to think in certain ways that jeopardize that status quo. And I think what you see in the Bitcoin movement is a lot of people who are becoming awakened to the fact that that's going on, and mm-hmm. are and feel very strongly that that's wrong and not for them, and they want to wake up other people to say, is this really for you as well? For you as well. So Bitcoin is so much more than being about getting rich quick.
Yeah.
And people are drawn to it. I always say it's kind of like a reverse moral trap. It baits and switch you. It's like, come here and get rich quick. And people are like, oh, I'm greedy and very high time preference. I want to satisfy my greed instantly. And they run into Bitcoin and they look around and it starts to change them. And they're like, well, I don't really want to get rich quick. I want humanity to survive over the long term and to thrive. And I want to self-actualize and see the people I love self-actualize and fall in love with other people and see them self-actualize. And that's what the movement becomes. And so it's the exact opposite of a trap. It's the anti-trap. It's the anti-bait and switch. It takes you when you've already been corrupted by a civilization that says money is everything, and you judge a person. You know, you start typing someone, any famous person's name into Google, and it auto completes with how much, what's their net worth, right?
Isn't that so weird? Who are they married to, and what's their net worth? Yeah. I'm like, right. I don't.
That's how we judge people, apparently, like yep. a single number. You are worth $200 billion. That person is worth $30,000. So you're worth billions of times what, you know, millions of times what they're worth. It's pretty sick. And you can see how ingrained it is in our civilization by just starting to type something into Bitcoin, into Google, sorry. And that is, I think, what the irony, because someone could have a net worth in Bitcoin, like how much Bitcoin do you have? But in Bitcoin, nobody says how much Bitcoin do you have. Nobody dares to answer. It's an insult, right? You don't walk around saying I'm worth this many Bitcoin. You try to. It's not a matter. You know, stay humble and stack your sats. Not
Matt Odell, yeah, baby.
How rich you are. So it's so ironic that in a society corrupted by lust for money and greed for money and bad money, something comes around and says, here I am, I'm the new money, and people run into it because of their greed. And it actually says, now be a human being again, right? And it leads them back down the path to what it really means to be human, which isn't to pursue money at all costs and to lie for it and to cheat for it and to scam for it. It's in fact to use it as a means to an end, the end being having a better life, ultimately a spiritually better life.
Totally. And you touched on something. What does it mean to you to be human, Tomer?
That's a really deep question. So you just like, you're going, again, it's very hard. Yeah. It's very hard to condense it fully, but it's an experience that has the benefit of, first of all, being alive. Second of all, being conscious, being aware of being alive. Being aware that you have free will. So mm-hmm. having free will, being aware that you have free will, being aware that you have the faculty of reason, the ability to think and see and to imagine. Imagination is obviously a huge part of what being human is, and putting it all together and interacting with other humans, being a social being that interacts with these other social beings that have imagination and reason and free will and life and awareness and consciousness. And that is, you know, I could spend 10 hours talking about it, but if I'm just trying to do it in 30 seconds or so, I think that's it. I think that's our nature and kind of what makes us reasonably unique, at least on Earth. And so that's what makes us different. But we can connect to, I have dogs that I love, and I love the tree that's out there. So there's connections to other different types of consciousnesses as well. But to the connection to other human beings and to fall in love with someone and form a family and form a relationship and have children and raise them is also a very big part of the human experience. But every minute that we're alive is a moment that we ought to be human. And I think that there is this, when you talk about spiritual terrorism, I think that there is a different philosophy, which if you've thrown the title out there, I'll grab onto it and
yeah, grab it, baby.
Define it, which is these transhumanist movement, which wants to somehow exit the body. Like, I guess one other thing I didn't say is you have a physical body, and with physical needs and physical wants and physical limitations and physical realities. And there are things you need to do to keep it healthy. And the same is true of your mind. And I think that there is this transhumanist movement that is somehow trying to escape that. It's trying to escape the reality of what we're in, to live in the metaverse, to rely on pharmaceuticals and the healthcare industry to care for your health, rather than to take self custody, you know, self sovereignty, self ownership and responsibility over your own health by exercising and eating healthy and not doing dangerous things and maintaining a fit body. And all they're trying to wash away that whole thing with data, with technology, with pharmaceuticals. And so there's this it's kind of like an anti-human movement, right? It's trying to make us not be human. It views itself as progress. I disagree. I don't think it's progress in the right direction. I think it's falling down a path that removes from us all of that human experience of reason. It doesn't say think for yourself. It doesn't say use your mind. It doesn't say eat healthy for yourself. It doesn't say exercise. It says buy these products, subscribe to these services, be serviced by these corporations. And so it's put these man-made entities above man, and made man a servant of these man-made entities, right? Like corporations, we should create corporations to serve our needs, not we should create corporations that we become the slaves of and the victims of. And I think that's a misstep that we took somewhere along the industrialization path, where we had, oh, look, now we can make copper wire. It's fantastic. We can spread electricity through it. It can make our lives great. And we somehow became, through a combination of marketing and earnings reports and stock trading and fiat money, we somehow became the product of and the victim of these entities, which are mindless. They don't exist without our minds, but they have goals, which we give them, which we tend to make quarterly goals or daily sales goals, you know, or engagement goals. And now these things operate with a fervor and an intensity that it's very hard for individual human beings to resist, but they're not aligned with what human beings want, and they're not aligned with the human experience. And so that's the war. Given it the title, they're the terrorists in this war, right? They literally terrify us and terrorize us. We live in a constant state of terror that there will be a recession, that this something will get pulled away from us, that we can't take care for ourselves, that there's a pandemic or a climate crisis or something is saying be scared all the time. If you don't comply, you will be responsible for tremendous things. You should feel guilt. At least, you know, it could be bad for you, it could be bad for other people. It's a pretty dark world that we're told we live in, even though I'm looking out the window and it's a beautiful world.
It is. And it's all about our perspective, right? And I wear these heart glasses a lot because I love and hearts, but I think about it reminds me to think of, like, you have a choice of how you look at the world. You can look at the world through the lens of fear, lack, scarcity, all of those, right? Or you can look at the world through the lens of love. And I need that reminder because I've been subject for, you know, over half a century of this programming, you know. And I was driving home from the Beef Initiative conference this weekend, which was really awesome. And I got to go be on a beautiful ranch and meet these ranchers. I've never met a rancher in my life. I'm like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And just learning about, you know, where does my food really come from? I've met farmers, but not ranchers really. But on the way home, I was listening to, of course, music. And I was listening to The Revolution Will Not Be Televised by Gil Scott-Heron. And this was made back in the 60s, around when Vietnam was happening. And the same story that's happening today was happening then. And he talks about all the corporations, like, you know, the revolution will not be taste better with Coke and, you know, all the things. And so he goes through this whole song, and it's like the corporations and the media still are running so much of the show. And then obviously behind that, we've got the central banks and all this. I didn't even know about central banks really before I learned about Bitcoin. And I'm like, okay, something happens here. And okay, great, we're fine. And so I was pretty dumb and numb to what was going on, because I was living like a little contained life and everything seemed to be okay. And I didn't really, I thought I was a worldly person. I thought I was a spiritual person. I thought I was compassionate about other humans. And then when I started really understanding the depth of slavery that's going on in the world today because of the money system, I realized like, wow, I have so much more learning to do and I have so much more work to do in this world. And this is the way to do it, is really helping get Bitcoin out there. I don't know. That was my wake up for sure. And so you mentioned family. Is your family, are they Bitcoiners? Do they get it?
Not. They're not like me, I guess.
No, it's like you, Tomer. You're the bomb.
They accept that it is an interesting investment, and they're a little bit curious about it, but they each have their own curiosities that are their passion. So none of them have gone deep down the rabbit hole, and they're a little bit concerned that I'm insane.
I know, my family feels the same way. Yeah. They're like, so, we already know mommy's a little insane anyways. I mean, look at me. I'm a little rainbow fairy over here. But now this, they're just like, really? Come on, mom. But I'm like, no, really, I promise. You got to do more research and you just got to take some time. And they just, it's hard, you know? And I know we've talked about this before, about like how to communicate with different people who have different incentives and different ways of approaching the world and what their pain points are and how to share what Bitcoin means for them, you know, and see if it could help them understand, you know.
Yeah. You have to meet people where they are.
Yeah.
And as much as you want everyone to be where you are, everybody actually is where they are. And so that's, you know, and it's even hard to meet in the middle because they're not in the middle, they're where they are. And so if you want to bring them to you, you have to go to where they are. And then slowly lead them to you, because I'm talking about like whether it's spiritually or intellectually, you can't force a mind. You can't force someone to believe in something that they don't believe in.
Yeah,
you can't force them to understand something that you understand, but that they don't. So it is a process of teaching, guiding, and it takes two to tango in that process, right? A teacher and a student. And so someone who doesn't want to learn about something will not learn about the thing. There's no way to force them. There's all sorts of attempts to force people through incentives and punishments, carrots and sticks, as they say. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you know, I also think it's immoral to trick someone into learning about something that they didn't really genuinely want to learn about. And that's what our education system ultimately sadly does. It's like, I don't want to learn about Canadian history or geography. It wasn't my int, but like somebody said, well, this is what's good for you. It wasn't my parents. It was some administrator at some ministry of education that decided this is what's important. And they offered a carrot and a stick. You know, we'll fail you if you don't learn this, and we'll pass you and give you a letter A written on a piece of paper if you learn it really well. But it wasn't what I wanted to be. I know I'm speaking generally for people, right? People are generally miserable at school unless they perform well at it. And then they're spiritually hollow when school is done because they work for these letters on pieces of paper rather than for knowledge that drove them and drove their true passion. And they want to then stay in school and earn more A's because it felt so good to get an A. And they are devastated if they get a B, but it's just a little bit of ink on a page, a little bit of toner on a page. It's not really knowledge that you can apply in the world that you can use to realize who you are and realize the full potential of what you are capable of. So there's just so much that needs to change. It's, you know, when we start to talk about education or health or awareness or money, because it's all broken right now, it works as for what it is, but it doesn't work for what we are as human beings, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you brought a really great point up, a couple of things, like, you know, trying to force something, you know, the carrot and the stick. I remember Alex on Cafe Bitcoin, he was like, Val, you can't just like put bait on a fish hook and then just like force the fish to eat, jump in the water and go put the fish on the hook, you know? And I'm like, okay. So it's good to like have those perspectives of like, just make a buffet and, mm-hmm. you know, allow people to come when they come. Like, your book to me is like a gorgeous buffet of information mm-hmm. and sharing. But at the conference this weekend, there was a really cool panel of women talking about homeschooling and home birthing and really just taking the power back into your home. And obviously it was a lot about homesteading and feeding your family. And so I really mm-hmm. enjoyed listening
it's
to
even like, it's a crazy idea now to talk about home cooking. You know, a home cooked meal is it wasn't delivered by an Uber driver and made at a fast food restaurant that manufactured. So all of these things that start with the word home, like schooling, studying,
all of it. And we've lost that. And I think, you know, obviously there's cycles of life and there's, you know, I always think of things in terms of a pendulum, you know, and it's like, okay, now we're all hippied out in the 60s and 70s and everyone's on acid and wow, it's crazy. Okay. Now we got to go get the conservatives in the 80s mm-hmm. and all of this. And then, okay, we're going to just, you're constantly like trying to break free of what the other thing was, you know, mm-hmm. it seems like societally. And so there's got to be some kind, you know, there's no like balance. I always say balance is bullshit, but I think my hope is to strive for like harmony in all these different areas of life, you know, because all these things have to kind of, they have to play nice together. Like I would never want to listen to that was a balanced song. You know, like I want to listen to a song that has ups and downs and ins and outs, but they go together, you know? And like, I think mm-hmm. life is like that too.
Sure.
Do you feel, you know, the reason I said spiritual terrorism, and I feel like it's an insidious attack on our souls, like the way that the system is organized right now and the way that it's gotten out of control. And I feel mm-hmm. like people maybe aren't even aware that that's happening, you know, and that like having mental breakdowns, we're obviously having physical health breakdowns, we're having relationship breakdowns, we're having, you know, breakdowns in the environment. And so all of that to mm-hmm. me, it's like it roots into our soul and it affects our soul if we don't take action on all of these things. And so it can be overwhelming. And sometimes people are just like, fuck it, Netflix, let's go. And they check out because I think it's crafted to be overwhelming, and I think it's on purpose. I don't think this isn't on accident that this is happening.
Yeah. Well, there's two things then in your choice of words, just for me to be, I'm not trying to be pedantic about it. I'm trying to be analytic about it as I think it through. Terrorism is not insidious. Insidious is like, I think is more what you described, where it's slow, it's creeping, it's invisible, it's covert, you're not really even aware that you're a victim of this thing, and then when you wake up it terrifies you that you have been a victim of it, but it wasn't intended to terrorize you. Terrorism itself is more like boom, these shock waves of planes flying into buildings, bombs going off, things you don't expect, acts of violence that have someone to blame for them. And there's a similarity between these two things, because one can be seeking the same end goal, right? Which is to use fear to basically disable people.
Right? And do you think I look at mainstream media as a tool of terrorism, like a psychological terrorism, like everything is sensational, everything is horrific, everything is blown out of proportion, and because it's a tool of the state and it's a tool of corporations,
so they've managed to combine insidiousness with terrorism. there isn't really terrorism going on, but they make you think there is. Every day if you turn on the TV, it'll be a terror that you see, and that is, you know, and that is what the goal is of CNN, because CNN doesn't have as its stated goal, let's terrify people. CNN has as its goal, like every corporation, we must maximize shareholder mm-hmm. value, which means we must maximize profit, which means in our business model, we need to sell the most ads at the most amount of money, which means we need people watch the most number of people watching, which turns out it means we need people to be scared and watching into the news to see what the latest update is on what's gone on wrong in the world. We can't have people walking around feeling like the world is a safe place and not needing to watch the news. They must be terrified all the time. It's a consequence of their goals. And so right. CNN is inherently, and Fox News, I'm not trying to pick on one news network, they're all the same.
Yeah.
The news business is a business that needs its customers worried all the time, and they need to feed their worry. They can't, there's a great meme or like fake newspaper billboard that says, or like fake image of a newspaper that says, you know, 10,000 planes land safely today, you know, hundreds of kittens born, you know, people continue to be born. And
Johnny tied his shoelaces the right way on the first try.
They can't report on every plane that landed safely. They need to report on the plane that crashed or almost crashed or the scandal at the plane manufacturing company. But, you know, planes aren't crashing every day. Like, just think about that, right? And people aren't being murdered left, right, and center every day. But that's all the news is.
Yeah.
It's as if, you know, we're not taking a sampling of life at large. We are taking the very, very worst of humanity and putting it on display and saying, this is what humanity is. This is what's going on in the world. This is not what's going on in the world. This is 1/1,000,000,000 of 1% of what's going on in the world. The rest is trees are growing. You and me are talking. People are getting along for the most part. And people are going to work and then they're coming home and then they're eating. It's not very exciting. It doesn't get high ratings. So that is a big part of the problem in an attention-driven economy, a media-based economy.
Mm-hmm.
Our outrage needs to be fueled. It turns out, I mean, there's brain science behind this. It turns out that the part of our brain that feels fear, which is called the amygdala, is capable of hijacking our whole brain, which is especially our rational brain, which is called the neocortex. And so that part of you that there's like two people, there's more than two people inside of you, but there's two parts inside of your brain. And if they can trigger your fear response, that triggers a complete hijack of your rational self, which as I said, is a part of what being human is. So it steals a part of your humanity from you and puts you in this fight, flight, or freeze reaction that people people are familiar with and can actually do that. If you're scared, that's what you will do. You will do one of these things. You won't sit back and relax because that's the way a being needs to be. If a lion jumps out at you in the jungle, you don't have time to reason and think about it. You have to go automatically, freeze, hope he doesn't see you.
Yeah.
Run, fight, flight, or fight, right? And go for it. So we were kind of automatically programmed to do that. And when we create artificial situations of lions jumping out at you, which is the fear of a pandemic or the fear of getting the vaccine for it or the fear of inflation or the fear, like just this endless parade of fears coming on the news, we get hijacked. So tune out the news if you can. One of the healthiest things.
Well,
and,
even
like, you can.
I know you and I are on Twitter a lot, and Twitter has definitely opened up my eyes to a lot of things that go on, but it's also, it's calmed me down. It's calmed my nervous system down to a certain degree because of Bitcoin and the hope and possibility of Bitcoin. But it's also, again, it's opened up my lenses to all these other things that are going on that I didn't really realize. And I think one of the scariest things for a human to feel is powerless, trapped, and hopeless. Like those three things, like when a human feels that way, it's like an animal. If you're feeling cornered, you're like, whoa, you've got to like do something to get out of that feeling. And when you don't know what the answer is, a lot of times we will check out, you know, we'll go turn to drugs or alcohol or sex or shopping or overeating or all these things. I call them like trying to fill your soul hole because you're just, you know, that like, you're like, whoa, something's wrong. Something's empty. I'm going to keep trying to consume something to ease this absolute discomfort and this emptiness. And so you kept saying, when I was asking you about what does it mean to be human to you, and you kept saying the awareness of, you know, and so it's also the awareness of these fears and these traumas and these experiences and knowing like, is this true? is this really true? Is, you know, just like you said, one billionth of the things you see are really like, that's the bad stuff. But most things are actually pretty good if we really look around, right? Like, wow, we have electricity. I don't have a bomb on my head today. Thank God, you know, and things are actually really, really good. But it's that one little thing, you know, that nags at us because there's a survival mechanism within us that's like, okay, if this little thing gets underneath the wrong part in my life, it could take me out. And that's what our minds, we start to focus on. And so it's super important to have conscious awareness around what is reality and what isn't, and what are our practices that we can engage in on a daily basis, mindfulness, heartfulness, et cetera, to keep in our position of inner power and peace and be connected with like source and God, whatever people like to call that. What do you say that at, to that? Do you want I know it's a lot.
Like, I agree. Listen, I agree with what you said. I'm just trying to pick out a question.
You're like, is there a question?
What was the question again?
Just high five, no, Tamer. Like, that's all.
Yeah. Right on. No, I do think that getting in touch, this, I'll go back to what it means to be human and what the possibilities are. And a lot of people are familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where you know, you have basic needs like food and warmth and shelter, clothing, and then you work your way up ultimately to the top rung, where there's this notion of self-actualization. And many people think they're there, but they really haven't had the opportunity to get there because something like fear has held them back. And it's only when you can let go of your fears and explore who you are, which is a unique thing in the universe, that you start to explore your self-actualization. And I don't know that any of us actually ever completes this task of self-actualization, because there's so much more to learn about ourselves and to refine and to get to this ever-increasing higher point of self-awareness and connection with reality and the universe. And there's so much to know. Well, none of us will ever know it within a single human lifetime, depending on what happens. So I think that there is this really wonderful opportunity as a human being to, and as a human race for all human beings, to identify what our needs are, satisfy our needs. It's really not that hard, especially when we have access to things like energy and machinery and computing. It's like we can apply all those things to make it so that there's very little risk and very little poverty with respect to the sustainment of our basic needs, and to then start to move up and to not get caught on the trap that is, well, I just need more and more material goods, because they cease to satisfy you after some point in time. Like, you can only eat so many, you can only fill your soul with so many donuts or so many fancy cars or such a big house. At some point, these things all become an inversion and they become a liability rather than an asset. Like, how do I clean a house that's 16,000 square feet? Or how do I take care of a boat that is, you know, a yacht? How do I deal with a sports car or a bunch of sports cars? Like, it's, they cease to provide value. And really the only value you can actually find, which is a path that you can continue to pursue and continue to find rewarding, is the spiritual journey, a spiritual journey of whether it's love for you or creativity or exposure to nature or studying something and obtaining knowledge or furthering and advancing a particular field of knowledge. That is something that isn't dead ended. That is something that doesn't, because you just follow your heart in these things, right? And so you're always going towards where there's greater satisfaction. Whereas if you just follow the need to spend more money, which is what every corporation wants in the world from you. You liked our product A, try our product B, try our product C, try our plus size, max pro, grand version 14 of our product. So it again is where there's this misalignment between what corporations want, what these human invented things that are meant to provide us with our basic needs and many of our wants, but they're not meant to provide us with our spiritual fulfillment. That comes from within, and that comes from other human beings. These are the things that money can't buy. And those things that money can't buy are the things that we can actually continue to pursue, for the rest of our lives without needing money to pursue them. You need money to pursue the things that some of them depend upon, but
yeah,
just as the base layer of sustainability, and then you can of survivability, and then you from there you can go on a journey that will take you the rest of your life, and that you'll be satisfied that you did all these things when the time comes to shuffle off this mortal coil, as they say.
Yeah.
So I do have one article on Medium that this reminded me of, which is called Rich or Poor Bitcoiners. It's called Rich or Poor Bitcoiners Have What Money Can't Buy. And you can find it on tomastrolight.medium.com if you scroll down enough or search for Rich or Poor Bitcoiners Have What Money Can't Buy. And it speaks to how, whether you have a lot of Bitcoin or not, the process of becoming a Bitcoiner opens your eyes to a lot of these things that money can't buy, whether it's things like friendship, or things that are, which is an external relationship with other people, or it's internal things like integrity and intelligence. These are things that develop within you when you start the journey of becoming a Bitcoiner. And it doesn't matter whether you have 0.01 Bitcoin or 100,000 Bitcoin, it's the same journey and the same benefits that emerge from it.
And so for you, Tomer, like you're, you know, I got to interview Patrick Melder, and he shared with me a special story about you. And do you want to share it? Is that okay?
Sure.
From in Miami. I don't know if you want to go there, or if maybe you want to talk about the consciousness group or something, but I feel like the audience might be interested to learn about your some of your spiritual expansion and awakening recently.
Right. Okay. Well,
is that okay?
Specifically, yeah, that's fine. That's okay. Fine. I'm not trying to hide my experiences. I think narrowly speaking, for people who are curious, what was the experience? Was I was baptized at age 52 in Miami in the ocean at the Bitcoin conference by Bitcoiners who are Christian. So it's like,
so cool.
Okay. Right. And 2 years ago, I was a militant atheist who hadn't studied much. Anything in the way of Christianity at all. I'd been born into and raised traditionally, like in the what's the word I'm looking for, in a very secular manner, as a Jew. And so I had like a bar mitzvah, and I was circumcised when I was 8 days old. But I don't remember that, obviously. But you know, we did the traditional things, but we weren't religious. We weren't believers. And for me, part of this, it wasn't entirely because of Bitcoin, although it wouldn't have happened because of Bitcoin. So Bitcoin was a necessary condition in a spiritual awakening for me that made me believe in many things, including the God of the Bible and Jesus Christ. And that's too long a story to try to tell in the little bit of time we have left, but it has been this, opening of my eyes to say that there's so much more to the universe and to being alive than simply billiard balls of molecules bouncing back and forth from each other, that there is kindness and benevolence and wonder and beauty and all these things that we can appreciate. And I think that for me is one of these big things. It's like, if we were just billiard balls of atoms bouncing around, then, you know, I would taste something, and I wouldn't say it tastes delicious. I would say it tastes nutritious, right? This has the right atoms in it that my body requires. I would hear sound. I wouldn't be interested in music. Music serves no purpose. There would be sounds that are scary because they come from something dangerous, and might not even be scary. It would be like bad for life survivability, good for life survivability. But instead, it's like, it's beautiful music. It's beautiful sound. It's a beautiful woman, right? It's beauty and deliciousness and wonder and all this ability to appreciate existence rather than to just be in existence, in this mindless existence, in this unappreciative, neutral existence. No, it's quite the opposite, right? And so there is a spiritual wonder to everything, and we can't deny the existence of the fact that we experience life through appreciation or through its quality rather than as deterministic events over which we have no control and somehow suffer from this illusion that we value things. No, we don't value things. There's chemical squirting in our brain, and we somehow mistake. Well, how can we mistake it? Why? why would we develop that ability to mistake things when it makes any of that really holds up to any scrutiny? And so I know the critics will say, okay, but you can't just say, so God did it. And that's true. But you can look at enough things and see enough things that point to the evidence of there being a very loving and kind and creative and magnificent and powerful force in the universe that constructed a universe in which everything is so beautiful to us, even, right? Like it's like when we were put here, like I can look at a galaxy in a space telescope and say, wow, that looks beautiful, as opposed to it looks horrible or I'm indifferent to the way it looks. Everything looks beautiful. So the whole universe is beautiful to us for some reason. And that's not a biased reaction. Okay?
It is. It's an awe-inspiring. I heard you use the word wonder. Like, I love the idea. Right. I think there's a company, it's just like Live in Wonder, you know, and they have all these t-shirts about Live in Wonder. And it really is like that, the thing that you can do in the moment. And it's done to you through the grace of God, through the grace of the universe, creator, whatever people want to call that mystery, you know, that everybody's got their own different way that they approach it. And it's just like, it can overtake you, which is so nice, right? When you, like you said, you see a beautiful flower, a painting, a song, a woman, whatever, you're like, oh, it just happens. You don't have to, it's not in your head, it's here. Like you can surrender
to it. And I think that's it. I think that desire, for me, I lived so much of my life refuting it because it was important to me to not believe in certain things. And so as beautiful as things were, it was like, okay, well, you know, it has to be because of some unconscious process that led to this and, unplanned process that led to this and purposeless process that led to this. And so I would repress my sense of wonder and sense of joy and sense of spirituality, which I no longer do. I try not to do. I still try to greet things with scrutiny, with reason, with rationality, but that rationality doesn't carry with it the axiomatic presumption that everything is purposeless and deterministic.
Yeah. Yeah. How many minutes do you have? I don't want to, I know you've got some stuff.
I have a couple of things. So.
Okay, cool. I want to honor your time. And thank you so much for taking all this time so far. I love talking with you so much. I could talk with you forever. I know you did. I saw your post. You said something today like Bitcoiners are scrutinizers. I can't remember exactly.
I was reaching out to that Frank Zappa album, Joe's Garage, where he has, if you're familiar with it, he has a character in it, the central scrutinizer. And so there's clever lyrics. I recommend you listen to it. At least the first side of the, I think it's like
okay,
a
so it's
album.
Frank Zappa. What is it?
Joe's Garage. Great album. Lots of fun. Very irreverent.
Cool. Okay.
But even just this comes from the very first song on the first side of the first album of this collection. And so if you listen for the first 15 minutes, there's great music and it's all very tongue in cheek fun. And it's actually quite relevant to the Bitcoin experience, the opening lyrics of the first song, which is spoken word by Frank Zappa.
Okay. I'm lots definitely going to check it out. I'll put it in the show notes too, for people to check out. So, okay. So with it, with our couple minutes left, so let's say you have, you only get to say nobody's ever going to get to hear your voice again. And you have one thing that you want to share with Bitcoiners, atheists, people who, you know, are on the fence, who might be kind of Bitcoin curious or spiritual curious. What would you say to those folks if you could just kind of share one thing for them?
If it's only one thing, it's give each other the benefit of the doubt, love each other, right? Mm. Like that is the best path to everything that's good, right? That it lies in love. And experience, like, and open yourself. Maybe we'll just where we kind of finished off, which is open yourself to the possibility of wonder.
Yeah, I love that. Open to the possibility of wonder. And you know what you said too, the giving each other the benefit of the doubt. I forget who said it, but they just said that the ultimate act of kindness is giving each other the benefit of the doubt. You know, it's giving the other benefit of the doubt, because it is. It's a way to to open your heart and hope, you know, assume that the other person has some good intentions or the other thing, you know, whatever mm-hmm. the thing is. I think it's really, mm-hmm. really, it's an important thing for all of us to stay that way and stay open, right. especially in, even in this world that's a little bit on the crazy side. Wonder here, Shaheen.
Yeah, agrees. I mean, you only gave me one thing to say, right? Because another thing I would say is don't trust, verify. But here I've said give everybody the benefit of the doubt. So there's a balance to strike here. But in a world where I would say if we do one thing about Bitcoin here, it's like this mm-hmm. system that says don't trust, verify, that eliminates all the trust in the world, creates the most trustworthy system that's ever existed, and the people who abide by it seem to, for the most part, become very trustworthy people. I know I personally am. You don't have to trust me, but I'm a more trustworthy person now than I was before Bitcoin came across, because I have a mechanism on which to rely on that allows me to know that others are acting in a trustful manner with me. Even the biggest liar in the world can't trick me in a Bitcoin transaction. I may know he's a terrible, awful liar, but if he says he's sending me Bitcoin and he sends me Bitcoin, even though I know he's a liar, I know he told the truth in that particular instance, right? And vice versa. So there's this raising of truth and trust from this thing, and it is a structure of trust that allows us to give each other the benefit of the doubt for those who abide by its rules.
I love it, and I think that's kind of the ethos of this community that I'm still new to, and so grateful to have found this, and it found me, and I just feel like we're just scratching the tip of the iceberg. So, okay, so everybody who's listening, you guys can go find Tomer at Tomer Strohlight, TomerStrohlight on Twitter. You can go to the whybitcoinbook.com and check out his book, which you guys must get. Please go get it. Go to Blurb. You can get the physical copy at blurb.com/user/TomerStrohlig. And you can definitely go check out Tomer's writings over on swanbitcoin.com/signal. And you can get him over on Medium at tomerstrohlight.medium.com. And of course, you can go to Bitcoin Magazine. Also, Tomer, you're prolific. Bitcoinmagazine.com/authors/.
And tell me you have the movie there too. That's the thing that for spiritual people.
And, oh, they need to go see this. So here, I'm going to put this on the screen because the link was so long to share. And so can they find the link on your Twitter site?
Just go to Google and search for Bitcoin is Generational Wealth.
Yeah. So it's right here. Bitcoin. So I have it. Oh, it's not plain, but it's on YouTube. It's Bitcoin is Generational Wealth. And it's a really, really cool. It's not the best showing up there. You guys really go check out that movie. It's so cool. Or the film. And Tomer, you've really inspired me a lot to become a better Bitcoiner, a better mama, a better friend, a better human. Right. And I'm really grateful to know you. And I really, really look forward to lots more fun and engagement. And maybe we'll do our ego death camp on the sailing cruise together. Ha ha. Let's go see if we can make something like that happen.
That sounds great.
Yay. Okay, everybody. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. And you guys can go get the show notes over at djvaloriebelove.com. And of course, you can follow me at Twitter at djvaloriebelove. And go check out the podcast at fountain.fm. It's a cool new way for all of us to learn about value for value. And you can stream sats to your favorite artists and creators. So I think it's a very, very cool tool. But most importantly, number one, go follow Tomer. Tomer Strohlight. Yay. Are you going to be at Pacific Bitcoin Conference?
Yes.
Okay. I've got to get some funds together to get myself out there. I really want to come see everybody in meet space, but thank you again so much, Tomer. And I wish you guys all a wonderful, safe, happy, healthy day. And thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll speak with y'all next time. Okay. Peace, love, and aloha. Yeah. Yay.
Aloha.
Bye-bye. Yay. All right, Love Tribe, thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate and rely on your support. So please share, like, and subscribe on your favorite listening apps. Our favorite listening app is Fountain, fountain.fm guess what? You can go listen to this podcast. And if you feel that you're getting some value, you can stream us some sats, and that'll help us with our production costs so that we can keep bringing you the absolute best content regarding Bitcoin, peace, and music. All right. Peace, love, and aloha. Wishing you the most blessed day.